The MMQB podcast is brought to you by the SeatGeek app, the easiest way to find a great deal, pay for your ticket, and get to your seat. Download the SeatGeek app and enter our code MMQB for $20 off your first tickets. We're also sponsored by FanDuel, the leader in one-week fantasy football, with more winners and more payouts than any other site. Enter promo code THEMMQB at FanDuel.com for a bonus match of up to $200.
This will be a very fun, they call these chess matches. I don't like that because I think football is already more complex than chess infinitely.
How could football be more complex than chess? There's chess geniuses who could beat you in like two moves.
Your guy, Brian Hoyer, fulfilled your greatest wish for this season, which was for him to get benched.
I just knew that it wasn't going to last long. It's not like I rooted for it. I've never met the man, Andy.
I know, which is what makes this whole thing sick. Absolutely sick.
This, once again, is the MMQB podcast. I'm Robert Klemko. My co-host is Andy Benoit. He joins us from Boise, Idaho, yes?
Yeah, that's where I will be for the foreseeable future right now. I guess I'll travel a little bit, but it's film watching time of year. This is the best time of year.
Yeah, I agree with you. Not necessarily for that. I mean, I like going to games.
Yeah, and you went to the St. Louis-Seattle game last week, and you just told me before we started, you told me you're going to Green Bay for the other Seahawks game.
Well, before we get into that, let's tell them a little bit about the show coming up. We've got Rams defensive tackle Michael Brockers joins us on the MMQB podcast. We had a great conversation with him, hopefully the first guest of many player guests over the course of the season. We're going to break down all 14 games as time permits. We're going to start with the Seattle Seahawks and the Green Bay Packers. The Seahawks fresh off a 34-31 loss to the Rams, and the Packers fresh off a 31-23 win over the Bears. These two teams coming off very different performances. The game against the Rams leaves a very bad taste in Seattle's mouth. And then, of course, the looming specter of more games without Cam Chancellor, who was holding out for a better deal. I wrote a little bit about that today. Before we get into that and the merits of his holdout, as you watch that game in your mind, what were some of the things that really held back Seattle's defense in not having him on the field?
I have seen that game, and real quick, we're going to focus on Seattle here. Green Bay, I watched that game as well. They look like their usual selves. I don't think there's a whole lot to be concerned about there. The Cam Chancellor factor and his absence, what you really lose with him besides the intimidating presence. And Deion Bailey, who played in his absence, wasn't bad. He was terrible on that last play, the one where he felt torn up about himself.
Yeah, he tripped and fell. Not much you can really do about that.
Well, but he tripped and fell because he played horrendous man coverage technique. He let Lance Kendricks get right up on him, and he stood still for the first 8/10 of the second of that play. I mean, he was a statue at first, and it was just a bad play. But overall, he was fine. The problem is fine is not equal to Cam Chancellor. And what you lose with Bailey in there and Chancellor out, besides the intimidation factor or the big hitter, is the element of disguise. Seattle did not do a lot of coverage rotations or disguise it. Not that they're a disguise-oriented defense, but rarely does Chancellor wind up in the same spot after the snap that he was before the snap. And that little bit of rotation is a big part of what they do. And with Bailey, they were very static. They were much simpler in there. And so I think the Chancellor absence will be critical moving forward, primarily for that reason. And then we're talking about probably the best strong safety in the game. The other thing, did you notice when you were there in St. Louis, Richard Sherman played the slot in nickel? He did not play outside cornerback. And if that's going to be the case moving forward, then we're talking about a totally redefined defense because your nickel defense is on the field for half the snaps.
Don't you think some of that was them trying to compensate in the alleys and in the intermediate middle part of the field for not having Chancellor? So you put Richard in there to have one of your strongest players supporting the safety more so than he would on the boundary?
Possibly. I hadn't thought of that. The thing about that is What kind of support are we talking about then? Are we looking for support as a hitter, as a tackler? Because Sherman, while he's very good at that by cornerback standards, you could also argue that he's not as good as any of the safeties on that roster, and that would include Deion Bailey. I don't know what the reasoning for him playing inside was or if it will continue. I was surprised by it. They have decent depth at corner. I don't think Marcus Burley's a bad player. I thought he was fine when he was in there last year. So I'll be very curious to see, and this will be a telltale week, because when you go against Green Bay, obviously, not just because of Randall Cobb, but because of the nature of that offense, you have to have a very intent plan for stopping the slot. So I'll be curious to see where they put Sherman. Remember last year, Green Bay did not throw at him often on the perimeter. If you put him inside, you can't avoid him as an offense as much. But again, we're talking about he's less of a player inside than he is outside.
Yeah. And if there's one stat that we can take away from the Packers game that is really pertinent to this game, Randall Cobb running 89% of his routes out of the slot. James Jones also a big factor in that game, certainly complemented by the presence of Cobb, but plugged onto the roster with the injury of Jordy Nelson, 4 targets, 4 catches, 51 yards, 2 touchdowns. I don't think it's something you're going to see every week, but it's nice to have a reliable replacement there.
Yeah, he and Rodgers have excellent chemistry, and that was immediately apparent and had been apparent for several years before when he was on the Packers team. So, and they also tells you how they feel about Ty Montgomery. Clearly, they think he's not ready yet because they signed a guy off the street, basically. I know it's a familiar, bigger name guy, relatively speaking, but they brought in James Jones, who hadn't been there in a year and a half, and he immediately supplanted Montgomery. So they've got continuity on offense. Cobb, this week, you mentioned him real quick. I'll be curious to see how much he comes out of the backfield in this game, because I think that's where he's not necessarily at his best, but at his most unique and therefore arguably his most dangerous. And he doesn't have to run his route out of the backfield, but where he aligns initially in the backfield and then comes out of it. And that comes when they feel they're going to get man coverage. And Seattle played a lot of man coverage against Green Bay last year in the NFC Championship game. We think of Seattle as that zone D, but they were really more of a man-to-man D late last season. So I'll be interested to see what they go with this season.
Yeah. Well, I think we've talked enough about the big game of the week. As you mentioned, I will be there. Very excited about that.
Why are you going to be there?
I'd like to write something about the Seattle defense eventually after seeing them for 2 weeks in a row and sort of a diagnosis. Obviously, it's an article that can fall apart in terms of meaningfulness as soon as Kam Chancellor either capitulates or they meet his demands to come back.
Do you think it can go somewhere in the middle?
I think they will. I think they will go somewhere in the middle. The problem for Seattle is that if they let a player renegotiate a deal that is set to expire in 2017, they're setting a precedent not just on their roster but across the NFL. Maybe you could get away with doing this for a for a quarterback. But in Seattle, you know that there are going to be 2 or 3 players lined up for raises as soon as you pay Kam Chancellor. And then the Seahawks get into a situation where the players are now looking at their cap space and saying, hey, you've got some money coming next year that you can move up for me. It's just not an effective way for John Snyder to manage a football team.
Yeah, but you know what? With the guys that they've already signed, whoever's lining up after Chancellor is not going to be half the player he is. They don't have a lot of stars left. It's one thing to tell Kam Chancellor we're not going to budge. It's another thing if let's say, Therald Simon lined up and held out or something like that, or Demarcus Dobbs or something. So,
well, I think it'll end up being Michael Bennett, and so that's no Therald Simon.
No, you're right, but maybe they make an exception. I think you make the exception. It's easy for me to sit here and say I don't know all the details. I do know this. It's a different defense without Chancellor in a bad way, and so if there's anyone you make an exception for, I would think it'd be him, and I would also argue if there's anyone else you make it for, let's say you can have 2 exceptions, maybe that's convenient logic, but let's say you have 2 exceptions, I'd say Michael Bennett's the next most important guy on that team to lock up long term.
Yeah.
Given that they've already locked up Wagner, of course.
Cowboys at Eagles, the Cowboys are 1-0, having defeated the Giants 27-26. The Eagles are 0-1, having lost to the Falcons in a kind of a strange football game last week, 26-24.
Yeah, both games were strange, too. Dallas's was a little bit unusual.
Yeah. What do we make of Dallas's rushing performance? I know that you and I are both high on the notion that with this offensive line, any combination of running backs that the Cowboys have on the roster should be able to at least combine to succeed in the way that DeMarco Murray did last season. But they go out and get 23 carries for 80 yards in this game, which would have been less than any 2014 total.
Yeah, it wasn't a great game for them. The Giants front seven played well, even though it's an understaffed front seven at this point. I think that Dez Bryant, you know, this question is two versions of it. There's with Dez Bryant and without Dez Bryant, because that fundamentally changes your running game, too. When you got have a guy that's going to demand safety help on a majority of snaps, then you not only get a lighter run box, but you know where the defenders are more inclined to wind up after the snap. You know where they're rotating to. And that can really help a zone-blocking run game. So the Dez Bryant factor changes things a little bit. And I don't know what this offense will be without him. When I say I don't know what this running game will be without him, because they thrive not just on having a dominant O-line, which they do. And my guess, if I had to guess, I'd say they'll probably be okay. And what we saw Sunday night with the poor statistical showing was an aberration. I don't know if we'll see a correction this week, though, because Philadelphia's front three is, in my opinion, the best in the NFL if we're talking about just a pure front three. And they're also very athletic on the back end. So, but anyway, I don't know what's going to happen with Dallas without Dez Bryant. It might be a fundamentally different looking rushing attack just because of how the defense can play them now.
Well, even if you look at their 2014 performances against Philadelphia, with Dez Bryant on the field, 67 carries for 208 yards, which is 3.1 yards per carry. A couple of performances that look like an aberration considering how well they ran the ball last year. So if they are going to struggle with Dez Bryant against the Eagles, they're certainly going to struggle more without him, yes?
That would be the reasoning. Now, we've learned not to expect the reasoning to always play out in the NFL, especially in September when we're not truly sure what all these teams are. But that's the logic behind it. Was Philadelphia defended this running game pretty well last season, and Philadelphia's run D on paper is much more talented, much better than it was last season.
Moving right along, the third game of the week that we're going to talk about, New England Patriots at Buffalo Bills. The Buffalo Bills are 1-0 after having beaten the Colts 27-14 in what was, in a lot of minds, the upset of the week.
Yeah, not to me necessarily. I would have picked the Colts, but I wasn't shocked that Buffalo beat them in Buffalo. Those cornerbacks, Robert, are very good in Buffalo. Darby was very impressive. Gilmore I've always liked a lot. And they were extremely aggressive against Indianapolis out of man coverage concepts, and especially against in-breaking routes, which is not something you see often. You don't see teams play, and by aggressive, I mean they jumped the ball, they made plays on the ball. You don't see that a whole lot in man-to-man coverage. That's more of a zone coverage aspect because you have an eye on the ball when you're in zone. And man-to-man, it's hard to locate the ball if you're looking at the receiver. They're going to play, if let's say this, I don't know what they'll play against New England, but if they play as much man as they did, at least in the first half against Indianapolis, it'll be a different outcome. Maybe not a negative one, but it'll have to go differently because the Colts are an underneath passing game, and you can't get up on their receivers and bump and run them the same way you can against an intermediate to deep spread passing game like Indianapolis had. So it's a whole different animal that they're up against this week. And with shorter dropback passes expected from Brady, it also nullifies a lot of the Rex Ryan pressure concepts that were so effective a week ago. This will be a very fun, they call these chess matches. I don't like that because I think football's already more complex than chess infinitely.
How could football be more complex than chess? There's chess geniuses who could beat you in like two moves.
Yes, not more complex. They're all complex to me, but football as an endeavor is much more intellectually complex than chess. That's just logic.
In chess,
the pieces move from one square to another one at a time.
I don't even agree. I can't agree with you on that one.
Well, you're wrong. In football, all 22 pieces move simultaneously, and they're not confined by squares. And also, by the way, in football, not every team's bishop is better than every other team's pawn. It varies from team to team. Robert, it's not even close. If on a 1 to 10, chess is let's say football is a 10 on a 1 to 10 scale for complexity. By comparison, chess would be like a 1.5.
I think the level of imagination it takes to be a chess master, to be one of these grand champions. What's the guy's name? Bobby Fischer. That's the only one I know because I watched the movie.
It's the only one you know. The level of imagination is minuscule compared to the one of football. Football, you have to be imaginative because you can go anywhere on the field, not just, well, do I go to this square or that square? Can I go that square?
We're not going to waste all of our time talking about chess here.
This is not a waste of time. Someone needs to take down chess. I'll tell you why. It's played by non-athletes, and in order to make them feel good, we've decided to treat chess as if it's
Andy.
Some, like, huge, huge thing. Like it's almost its own sport. Just because you're not an athlete doesn't mean you're not a fine person, but let's not call your little game a sport or try to equate it to actual sports that have much more schematic complexity.
All right. Are you done?
Yeah. Are you?
I want to talk about
something. You're defending chess here.
I want to talk about something that's really important in this game, okay? Two big contributors who are returning to the stage here, John Ostrymski and Jim McNally, the ball boys in the Deflategate case, have been reinstated by the NFL. They're back. What are your thoughts?
The NFL's case has looked whimsy at best from this whole beginning to me, and I've said from the start, I don't see why they don't just let teams do whatever they want with the ball anyway. Science will take care of the amount of deflation because you're not going to play with an utterly deflated football. So I haven't thought about it much more. I don't think there's much to think about.
Yeah, well, while we disagree on the finer points of science and how much the ball should be inflated, because I do believe that there should be standards that are strictly abided to, because once you start letting that thing get deflated any kind of way, then that's a slippery slope. However,
no, but Robert, is any team going to play with a totally deflated football?
No, obviously not.
So there's already an inherent limit on it. Why does the NFL need to predetermine what the limit would be? If every other rule the league has passed has been in favor of the offense and made it easier to throw and catch the ball, why wouldn't they make the ball itself easier to throw and catch? The object of the game is to outwork your opponent. It's not golf where you're playing against the elements and the equipment.
So what does it matter if the end zone is 10 yards and 2 feet deeper than the south end zone? Like, what's the big deal?
Well, the big deal there is because that's more territory for the opponent to defend.
Yeah, but it passes the eye test. Nobody's going to play with a 7-yard end zone. So who cares if it's a couple feet too long?
No. Not even close to apples.
It's
to, not
the
even
same
fruit.
Thing, Andy.
No, it's not. That's why it's not apples to apples. No way. The ball, your end zone thing, that's the geometry of the entire field. That's the conditions. That's the
We're talking about the geometry
field.
Of the ball, how it carries, how it throws.
But science already accounts for it, because if teams won't, you can only deflate a ball so much before it becomes counterproductive to you. Why not allow the deflate level to go all the way to most productive rather than this artificial 10 or 12 pounds per square inch? What's the matter?
I think there have to be standards for the equipment. I think there have to be standards for everything on the field. And I think this controversy has been blown out of proportion. It's been blown out of proportion already on this show.
No pun intended. Let me ask you this, and then I know, because we've gone over chess and science on this Bills-Patriots matchup, and we'll do Chargers-Bengals in a minute, and I'll try to talk football this time, and you can follow with me or whatever. But let me ask you this. Let's say there weren't a rule about inflation in a football, and then the NFL tried to implement one. Don't you think the league and the players would go up in arms about that, saying, why would you implement a rule that doesn't exist? If this rule didn't already arbitrarily exist, and it had to have been made arbitrarily, then why? What would happen if the league tried to install it now?
The NFL does that all the time. They upgrade the helmets that can be used by players. But
they don't make rules against the helmets.
Yes, they do. Older players are not allowed to use the helmets that they love and adore and they've grown accustomed to, and players get pissed off about it, then they put on the new helmet and they go out and play.
No. When that helmet rule came in, they let the older players wear those helmets for a while longer to have an acclimation time. It's not, you get what I'm saying, though.
You get what I'm saying, that there are things that change in terms of the way the NFL regulates the game, and nobody gets up in arms about it, and they're completely necessary.
I think what you're saying is completely wrong.
Okay. Chargers at Bengals. The Chargers are 1-0, having defeated the Lions 33-28. The Bengals are 1-0, having walloped the Raiders 33-13. My grandma was at that game, actually. She was at the opener.
At the Raiders opener.
Yep. She flew out there from Maryland. Yep. She goes to a Raiders game, a home game, at least one, every year they've ever existed in Oakland.
So does this count on as her one game then if the home team did not show up?
She's going to be listening. She's gonna pinch you when she sees
you. Well,
she
knows they didn't show up. The Raiders themselves know they didn't show up.
No, that's true.
That wasn't even, yeah. Chargers at Bengals. This will be a fun, this was a playoff matchup a few years ago. And it's what's interesting is it's pretty much the same exact guys on both sides here. Same, I guess it's, I believe it's a different offensive coordinator now for Cincy, but it's the same personnel on the field and it's the same defensive play caller and defensive personnel for the most part for San Diego. You don't see, I know it's only been 2 years, but you don't see that very often in the NFL anymore.
No, you don't. We are missing a key player in this game, DJ Fluker, out 4 to 6 weeks with a high ankle sprain. Some would say he's the Chargers' best run blocker. How do you think this changes their offense?
I don't know if it changes. He was their best run blocker. He had a very good game on Sunday. He was very good as a pull blocker, in fact, and looked very comfortable at guard. And if you're going to play guard, you've got to be able to pull block. So they might miss Fluker now. His replacement stylistically is similar. It's Chris Hairston, who is a 340-pounder. Almost every guy on this Chargers offensive line is 320-plus, well over 320, some of these guys. So I don't know. You have a lesser version of Fluker, essentially, who's in there right now. I don't think that changes your approach, and they are a quick passing offense. They might just be a little bit less effective in certain areas at times.
Before we get into the next game, I want to ask you about something that happened after the whistle in the Cincinnati game. Pac-Man Jones, and I'm going to keep calling him Pac-Man so long as his Twitter profile calls him Pac-Man.
Yeah, people seem to be doing that as like a little punishment to him. Remember when Big Baby Davis like broke his hand or something in a fight and missed the start of the NBA season a few years ago, and the Celtics took away his nickname? Danny Ainge said, "We're not calling him Big Baby anymore. We're calling him Glenn now."
Yeah,
this is like the inverse of that. Adam Jones requested to be called Adam, but you're right. He put the Pac-Man up on their little marketing tool with Twitter there, and so people, whenever he gets in trouble now, they say, "Well, I'm going to call him Pac-Man."
It's not because he got in trouble. It's because I think it's a cool name.
I like the name, too, and I especially love when Chris Berman would do the highlights and he would make the Pac-Man noise whenever Jones returned punts at a distance.
Yeah, but back to the question, he tears off Amari Cooper, the Oakland wide receiver's helmet, and then slams Amari Cooper's head into the helmet. He doesn't get suspended, doesn't get ejected. He's fined $35,000, and he says today to the media, "I can't promise it won't happen again."
I love the honesty, at least, right?
Yeah, I guess. I'm shocked that this hasn't resulted in a suspension.
Yeah, you know, Cooper didn't himself, I don't think this factors, but Cooper didn't make a big deal about it himself. I think he even said, I wasn't aware that he'd done that. You know, it was so quick or something like that. I don't know. If they had suspended him, I don't think I would have had a problem with it, and I'm not sure there would be an argument against it, but whatever. I'm just watching football. He's on the field. I like to see guys on the field.
Yeah. Detroit Lions at Minnesota Vikings, NFC North matchup, not one that matters a tremendous deal in the long term. I think we all think the Packers are going to run away with that division. The Chargers defeat the Lions 33-28, so the Lions are 0-1. The Vikings 0-1 after losing to the 49ers 20-3. Another big upset in week one. I did get a chance to watch that game live. Also really enjoyed the live blog by the Australian reporter from The Guardian. Did you get a chance to look at that?
No, because I'll tell you what, I don't watch any of these games live anymore.
Yeah.
I watch them all on film or on DVR later in the night because there's just so many commercials, I can't stand it.
Yeah, well, it was pretty funny.
We're going to do a commercial in a few segments here, too, it occurs to me.
We are. It was pretty funny. This guy, obviously he's watching Jarryd Hayne, the kick returner, running back extraordinaire, from the league rugby in Australia. So they're live blogging it, and reading his reactions, it occurred to me how many breaks there are in football compared to the other most popular sports in the world.
I'm not going to take the bait to get into a rugby debate because I would not be able to hold my own in it. But why don't you real quick take this chance to tell the listeners what two sports you played in college, and what was the reason behind playing the second sport.
I started.
This is typical Klemko, ladies and gentlemen.
I started playing football freshman year, Robert Morris University. Transferred home to Maryland. It's a story we don't have to get into, but I started playing rugby and I fell in love with the game. And to me, I like it because it's continuous. You're constantly thinking on the fly. There's not long breaks. And it's a little bit safer because you don't have a helmet and you're not hitting guys as hard as you can and they're not hitting you as hard as they can.
And that's an interesting point that you and I have talked about before. We probably need to do like maybe an off-season podcast about it, because that's an interesting topic, the tackling in the two sports. But when you first told me you played rugby, you had like an injury in college, right? And they wouldn't let you play football anymore?
Oh, right. Yeah, I was.
Yeah, and so why did you tell them why you played rugby instead then when you transferred?
Right. So this was before I transferred. I tore my labrum at Robert Morris playing tight end. I have the surgery in December, and I want to come back and practice on the football team, but they won't let me. All I can do is just go to the workouts and run with the team, which is, you know, the worst, you know, the least fun that you can have on a football team. So I just joined the club rugby team under a different name, and that's how I fell in love with the sport. I was playing under an
– You told me you did it to spite them.
I did, yeah. I was a little bit angry, and I knew that they would be angry if they found out. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So the Lions at Vikings, you know, I don't know. You said we had to pick a game every week, right? You want to just randomly pick one of these teams real quick and then get on to the team that destroyed Minnesota Monday night?
Let's pick the next one.
Okay. Let's just go right to the next. You know, look, these teams are going to play again. It's always a close matchup. The issue will be whether Minnesota can pass protect against a decent Lions front that really didn't show up last week. So who wins in the trenches and gets better this week is Lions-Vikings to me.
Yeah.
Someone's got to get better. They were both bad in their respective sides, offensive line for Minnesota, defensive line for Detroit last week.
Yeah. I'll tell you who was, and before we move on to the next game, I'll tell you who was, in my mind, the breakout player of the week so far in the NFL, Ameer Abdullah, the young running back, 21 snaps, 94 total yards. This is a guy that's listed third on the unofficial depth chart going into the game and ends up getting all of the carries. So much for those unofficial depth charts.
Yeah, no, those unofficial depth charts, you know, Joik Bell got 17 snaps, 41 yards. That is just a matter of time till Abdullah, whatever snaps Abdullah doesn't get will simply be a function of resting him. Bell will not be taking snaps from Abdullah as the season moves on. You've got the rookie's just too quick, and he's you can do more things with him.
Yeah.
How about Niners at Steelers then? Niners come in 1-0. Steelers are 0-1, having just lost to the Patriots.
Yeah. I think this is an enormous game, as big as games get for teams early in the season for the Steelers, because if you start 0-2 in a division that competitive, then you're looking at an uphill battle towards home field advantage. And I think that home field advantage in the AFC North, where, you know, you're either playing in Baltimore or Pittsburgh or potentially Cincinnati, it is an enormous thing in that division, probably bigger than in any in the league. The 49ers coming off what was an enormous win, a surprising win to some. Carlos Hyde, the big star of that game, 168 yards, 2 touchdowns, 77 yards after contact, which is the most of any player in week one. And it might end up going down as a top 10 performance, you know, for the entire season. This guy, I did not expect this from. And what really surprised me was not just the battering ability, but the vision, cutback. And then, God, did you see him execute that spin move?
Oh, man, that was cool. Yeah, not many moves make me, like, have the NBA dunk reaction where it's like, whoa, you know? NBA dunks always get me. But that spin move did do that for me. It wasn't the Beckham catch, certainly, not even close, but it made me react. Just, you know, I remember the Beckham catch did that, too.
Yeah. So,
you know what else surprised me, Robert, from that Niners team was, and I might be overreacting a little bit the more I think about it, but I'm comfortable doing that because he had so far to go in this department, was Colin Kaepernick playing from the pocket. He looked much more comfortable there. I didn't think he had that in him. He's got a ways to go still. But he showed a willingness to keep his eyes downfield. There were times where he climbed the pocket and made multiple progression reads, or, you know, got from A to B to C all the way to D at times. That was a different looking Kaepernick to me, and he was still effective running the ball when he needed to be. But the guy we've known for years was a guy that would run way too soon, get to the top of his drop, and immediately tuck the ball and go. Kaepernick looked poised to me, and I think Jeep Chris, the new offensive coordinator, was a big reason why, because he did a good job of calling plays with defined reads and keeping Kaepernick comfortable with moving pockets and running the ball, like you mentioned, with Hyde, especially out of multi-tight end sets.
Yeah. Another, you know, nice surprise out of that game is D'Angelo Williams for the Steelers, of course, replacing the suspended Le'Veon Bell. 6 yards per carry against New England's front seven, which is known as one of the better in the NFL, though now without Vince Wilfork.
Yeah, and it was still a decent New England front seven, even without Wilfork. I think you certainly would like to have him, but it's not how New England does business, and so, you know, we get how that goes. I was impressed with D'Angelo Williams. He got to the perimeter through design and through improv a few times. I liked Mike Tomlin's response too, when he was asked, you know, can this 32-year-old guy carry the load like you need him to? And he said, well, we know he can for 2 weeks. That was really good. That's honest. And that's exactly what they brought him in for too, is they need a Le'Veon Bell ersatz for a little while. And I think they've got one.
Yeah. Well, before we speed through the rest of these games, because we have a short amount of time left, I want to tell you guys about the SeatGeek app. If you use your promo code MMQB, you get $20 off your first ticket purchase. The SeatGeek app takes less than a minute to download, and it's free on iPhone and Android smartphones. SeatGeek does a ton of things that other ticketing sites don't. They aggregate from big ticket sites. Just like when you search for flights and hotels online, SeatGeek pulls in ticket options from hundreds of sellers to create a one-stop shop for sports and concert tickets. When you shop on SeatGeek, you're seeing virtually every ticket option available for that game, all on one page. No need to go anywhere else. SeatGeek's mobile app makes the ticket buying process seamless, easy, and safe. On SeatGeek, you can store your credit card, and once you find a ticket you want to buy, you can complete the purchase with just two quick taps. There's no faster way to buy tickets. To redeem your promo code and save $20 on tickets, download the free SeatGeek app today. Enter promo code MMQB in the app. SeatGeek will then send you $20 once you've made your first SeatGeek purchase. If you want to go see the NFL, college football, or the best concerts, use SeatGeek app and enter our code MMQB to save $20.
All right, Klemko, we talked to Michael Brockers earlier, and we're going to share that in lieu of you and I breaking down Washington and St. Louis matchup this week, because he did an excellent job. But real quick, do you want to run through Tampa Bay and New Orleans?
Sure. One of the bigger questions in this matchup, we talked at length about the Tampa Bay offensive line, some of the youth. You have Ali Marpet and Donovan Smith. They're both rookies. Is it still the number one concern in Tampa, or were you discouraged enough in Jameis Winston's performance to raise him as that number one concern?
Well, Jameis Winston is a methodical pocket passer who takes a lot of chances with the football. By definition, he's going to have games like this at times in his rookie season. This will not be the first one, will not be the last one, though. And I wouldn't read too much into that. We've seen other pocket passers struggle like that. To me, the real concern, if you're Tampa Bay, and they're going against a Saints passing attack that really was not very good at all against the Cardinals a week ago, but I think will be good this week, because the real concern with Tampa Bay is the safety position. And they have bad safeties playing behind an ineffective pass rush. When you play zone with bad safeties behind an ineffective pass rush, you're inviting 350-yard passing performances.
In previewing the Washington versus St. Louis game, we're going to throw you to our conversation earlier with Michael Brockers, the Rams defensive tackle.
Talking here with Rams defensive tackle Michael Brockers. Michael, thanks for taking time with us and coming off of a big win for you guys. surprising to some, but I don't think it was surprising so much to Robert and myself, looking at that defensive line athleticism versus that Seattle front. And you guys had the advantage there, I think, heading in and clearly throughout the game. And one of the plays where it was most evident was on the game-sealing tackle you had on Marshawn Lynch in overtime. Talk about going up against the right tackle, Gilliam, there, what you did to him, and what you accomplished on the play. Take us through the whole process.
Oh, yeah, thanks for having me. You know, on that play, you know, like I said before, it was a story behind that play. We had a play where we, we're in two threes. You know, I was supposed to what we call blast offensive tackle instead of kind of getting washed spot with the guard. And on a previous play, probably like in the third quarter or so, I was playing that same play, and I ended up, you know, getting outside of my gap, and, you know, Marshawn got about 3 or 4 yards, and, you know, we hold ourselves accountable here. So, you know, came to sideline, I told Greg that, you know, that was on me. Whatever he gained, that was on me. So, you know, it wasn't a linebacker's fault or anything. I have to have my gap, and, you know, just taking, taking that play into consideration, just knowing that, you know, whatever he gained, that was on me. And on that last play, you know, I think Greg, you know, took me up on my offer, and he ran, he called the call again. And, you know, when I heard the call come in, I was like, yes, you know, it's time for redemption. It's time for me to make up for the play I had earlier. And, I blasted the tackle, and Marshawn didn't really have anywhere to go, because usually he cuts on those runs. He never looks front side on that play. He always looks B-gap to cut back. So if I did a good job at knocking the offensive tackle back in the backfield, then he wouldn't really have anywhere to go. So I did my job, knocked him back, and I did a great job of, you know, getting around his legs so he couldn't keep him turning.
You've got coaches who will watch you screw up in a certain situation and then throw you back into the fire immediately, figuring that motivates you. And then you've got other coaches who will see you screw up or you know, not perform well on a certain play, and then they just won't run that play again. Do you find that there are more or less of either type?
I'm not really sure. You know, and I've had both. I've had, you know, where you call a call and, you know, you maybe call it two times and they gain a couple yards on each one, and you're like, okay, can that play? If it doesn't work, we're going to find something else. And, you know, like Greg did last week, you know, he had enough trust in me that, okay, yeah, I will give him, you know, that call again and see what he does. And, you know, I did a great job at making up for it and, you know, making the play.
Michael, you mentioned on that last play that Lynch does not take those zone runs to the front side. He keeps almost everything to the backside. Is that something you guys were aware? I know the Patriots, and maybe Akeem Ayers had filled you in on this or had shared something, but they had a very specific plan for those backside runs heading into the Super Bowl. I'm wondering if that was something you guys were aware of, and if you had a specific plan for keeping Lynch backside or attacking him backside or whatever it was.
Well, playing against these guys two times a year for, you know, a couple of years, you kind of recognize what people do. And Marshawn, you know, runs like that, you usually get the bubble. You usually get a shade in the five, and you wash the shade down and seal the five technique off, which is a defensive in and out. And you got a guard on the linebacker, and, you know, there he goes. So I think we did a more self scouting than we did, you know, looking at other teams and stuff like that. So yeah, we noticed that he didn't really go front side on a lot of those runs. He always went either the B gap, and, you know, if the end got washed, you cut it back, and, you know, that you're trying to get your DBs and secondary to make a tackle on the big, you know, big back like that. It's not going to happen. So more self-scouting from ourselves and just realizing that, you know, what animal we're going against, and knowing what he does.
Michael, you guys do something that's almost unique to the Rams. You'll go ahead and put a nose tackle over the center on third downs. What are some of the reasons you think that's effective?
I think, you know, we have a really special line. You know, you have Robert Quinn on one end. You have Chris Long. You have Aaron Donald, which is, you know, one of the most disruptive three techs in the game right now. So I think us, you know, having a nose tackle with myself and, you know, having Aaron you kind of split that up and you kind of have them pick their poison, you know, or are you going to slide to Robert Quinn and, you know, keep your line on him, or are you going to slide your line to Aaron Donald and try to keep, you know, double team him? But I think with having a nose, you don't want that penetration as well. So I think most of the time, you know, for a nose tackle or, you know, an inside and an A-gap, it's more about getting penetration so the quarterback can't step up. And, you know, if he can't step up, our rusher is going to get there. So I think that's the most important thing about, you know, our defense and our defensive line is what I bring is really trying to press that pocket and keep those quarterbacks, you know, in their five-step drops. And, you know, if they go any deeper, Rob is right there to get them. So, yeah, I think that was the most important thing about our defense is, you know, making sure that nose tackle gets some penetration, get upfield, and push into our rush.
Well, we really appreciate your time. Good luck this week. I can tell you that if the MMQB podcast made picks, we'd probably pick the Rams, but Andy's firmly against picking games.
All right, appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Michael.
Really good stuff there. And, we, you know, I appreciated him coming on and sharing with us. And I was glad, Robert, that and you tracked down the interview for us. You were in St. Louis recently. I was glad that you picked Brockers because I think he's a guy people need to know more about. We talk about Aaron Donald and Robert Quinn. Brockers has also lived up to his first round billing as well. He's a really good all around player.
Yeah, and it took him some time to do it. I would like for the podcast to kind of take on that identity of bringing on guys that we think are emerging players that need a little bit more credit.
Yeah, because there are guys like that every week in the NFL. Titans Browns this week. I'm trying to think if there's anyone from these teams that could be one of those emerging players. Tennessee comes in 1-0. Maybe Marcus Mariota. But I guess we've already crowned him for Canton now, right? Tennessee comes in 1-0. Cleveland's 0-1. Cleveland had the guy that last year people were hoping was Marcus Mariota and Johnny Manziel, who will, my guess is he'll play this week. Although, you know, it's only a guess at this point. Real quick, I guess, or we don't have to be real quick on everything, but what did you think of Mariota's performance? Everyone seemed to love it. I haven't seen it yet, but from what I've heard, it was pretty good.
Yeah, and I got a text actually from a Browns defensive player last night, unsolicited, and he said, Mariota is really good. And I said, really? And he said, yeah, he doesn't look like a rookie. So I think that there were a lot of positives. He makes quick decisions, okay? The guy doesn't linger in the pocket. He's got a great awareness of who's coming around the corner on his backside. I think that's special for a rookie. The one caveat that this performance comes with, and if you didn't watch or you haven't been paying attention, he was 13 of 16 for 209 yards and 4 touchdowns. The two caveats for you. He threw 16 passes, okay? He had a great rushing performance right off the bat from Bishop Sankey, 12 carries, 74 yards, and he ended up having and Mariota ended up being able to play more of a complementary role than he will play in most weeks. The other thing to note is that he didn't throw a pass that traveled more than, you know, 17, 18, 19 yards in the air. So I think if you were going to game plan your first game with a quarterback coming out of a Chip Kelly college offense, then this was the way to do it. And they happened to meet an opponent that was especially prone to be exploited in that way.
Yeah, the Buccaneers. And the one thing that's different about the Buccaneers D from Cleveland's D, it's a zone defense where the disguises a week ago were not executed very well. And so it's a vanilla zone defense. That's, you couldn't ask for a better scenario to play in your first NFL game if you're a quarterback than a vanilla, predictable, inept zone defense. Now they're going up against a man-heavy defense with a very good top corner in Joe Hayden, a guy that you can build all your coverages around, meaning Mariota's bound to see some disguises this week. We'll learn a lot more about him in this week. We're going to learn more about him every week, obviously. By the way, Manziel, for those who saw the throw to Travis Benjamin, it was a very nice throw. There are cases still where he leaves throws on the field because he cannot see over his offensive line. And if he plays this week, that's going to be a problem. It'll be a problem every single week. There's an inherent ceiling on Manziel that Mariota does not have, even though in the 1,000-degree stylistically they are from, you know, 1,000 feet up, I mean, they might look similar stylistically. The size is a big factor at the quarterback position, and that's why I'm confident to see what Mariota does moving forward.
So you're telling me that if you were to play FanDuel Fantasy Football this week, you might take Mariota, but not necessarily Johnny Manziel.
I'll take that as my cue. You've probably heard of FanDuel somewhere before, and here's what it's all about. FanDuel is the leader in one-week fantasy football with more winners and more payouts than any other site. They'll pay over $75 million a week this football season. Entry fees start at just a dollar. There's a league for everyone, and over 1 million players have already won money playing fantasy football on FanDuel. So now it's your turn. Go to FanDuel.com. Click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner, use the code THEMMQB, and sign up now. There's a special offer for new users as well. For every dollar that you deposit, FanDuel will match it with up to $200 that gets earned as you play. That's a bonus of up to $200. The offer is only good for the first 50 people who use the code THEMMQB. So don't get left out. FanDuel.com.
We're in the quick hit round. Arizona Cardinals at Chicago Bears. The Cardinals coming off a win over the Saints. The Bears having lost to the Packers. Andre Ellington is out of this game with a mild PCL strain. Chris Johnson would be the lead dog if Andre Ellington were to miss any time, says Bruce Arians. Chris Johnson goes from getting shot last spring.
You are fascinated by him getting shot. Every podcast you work in there somehow. Two things. You work in either that he got shot or that you worked out with him at Jay Glazer's thing.
First of all, I didn't work out with him. Second of all, I wasn't even going to say anything about it. Can we just talk about the football contest?
Well, what do you mean we're going to say anything about it? Here we are. We're talking about it.
Well, I wasn't going to say
anything. Quick hit round.
I wasn't going to say anything about Jay Glazer's gym.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Bears, Cardinals. I'll tell you what. Arizona's secondary was sensational a week ago. And if I'm Chicago, that's concerning to me for two reasons. One, I'm not very good at my passing game. I don't have a lot of depth at wide receiver, and I'm going against a team that has a corner they can plaster onto Alshon Jeffrey. That'd be Patrick Peterson. And then it's a team that's deep enough to play man coverage at their other corner positions, but they also do a lot of matchup zone principles. And matchup zone principles can be difficult for quarterbacks that tend to throw the ball in the middle of the field recklessly at times. It's bait for interceptions, and we saw that actually at the end of the, it wasn't a matchup zone, but it was a zone middle of the field with the end of the Bears game last week where Cutler threw it right to Clay Matthews. So this is not a favorable looking matchup for Chicago, at least on that side of the ball.
And I think we can expect the Bears to feature Matt Forte prominently in this game. 29 touches last week, 24 carries last week against the Packers. Next game, Atlanta Falcons at New York Giants. Falcons fresh off a win over the Eagles in a game that got close in kind of a bizarre way.
A bizarre way, Falcons got exhausted at the end there.
The Giants 0-1 after losing to the Cowboys 27-26. The matchup that I think most people will be watching, hopefully it happens early and often, Desmond Trufant, the Atlanta Falcons corner, versus Odell Beckham, a guy who in some ways disappeared in this first game, and I think it had a little bit to do with the hit that he took across the middle early on.
Interesting. I know Ron Jaworski on the ESPN NFL matchup show, and that's by far the best NFL show on television if you're into pregame shows. He said on that show, and Jaws doesn't just throw things around like this, he said Beckham had poor effort issues in the preseason and made too many business decisions. And now here you are saying, maybe that hit over the middle. I kind of wondered that too myself.
Yeah, well, I think it was clear that he was a little bit woozy after that. So it was, honestly, it was a little bit surprising to me to see him continue without being evaluated.
He's going to have to go over the middle of the field this season. I think he'll be willing to do it. I'm just saying there are whispers now, or I guess these aren't whispers, but open questions, is he willing to do it? And once these questions begin, once jackals like you and me, and I'm not going to call Ron Jaworski a jackal, but a media personality, once they start lobbing that out there, the players, the guys who pay attention to, who text these jackals when they're watching film sometimes, they're going to start wondering, maybe we'll test Odell Beckham, maybe we hit him early and see what happens.
Yeah.
Maybe there might even be a guy crazy enough to think it's worth 15 yards to hit him early.
Yeah. In this game, keep an eye on what might be a philosophic change for the Atlanta offense. Last year, they passed 63% of the time when within 7 points of the lead. And on Monday night, they passed only 48% of the time win within 7 points. The guy getting the bulk of those carries, Tevin Coleman. In Carolina, the Houston Texans visit. The Texans are 0-1 after losing 27-20 to the Chiefs. The Panthers have defeated the Jags 20-9 to start the season 1-0. In your mind, can Carolina, with all of these deficiencies and the major injuries that have hit their offense, continue to win with defense?
They can this week because your guy Brian Hoyer fulfilled your greatest fantasy, your greatest wish for this season, which was for him to get benched. It took him only 1 week.
I just knew that it wasn't going to last long. It's not like I rooted for it.
Yeah, well, you kind of did. You kind of did.
I've never met the man, Andy.
I know, which is what makes this whole thing sick. Absolutely sick. Houston, Carolina, I haven't seen that Texans film yet. I was going to watch it late in the week. Carolina, you know their formula will be. I think even if Kuechly's out of the lineup, and there's no reason to think he will be, but even theoretically, if he were, they can play the same way and be fine against an offense that's without its running back and without its I guess they don't know who their quarterback is.
Yeah. I think the big matchup to watch in this game last week, Travis Kelce of the Chiefs, 6 catches, 106 yards, and 2 touchdowns against the Texans. They faced another very good tight end in Greg Olsen. He could provide some matchup issues, though Carolina is without a significant weapon once again with Kelvin Benjamin out for the entire season. Ravens at Raiders. The Broncos defeated the Ravens 19-13 in week one. The Raiders, as we mentioned before, in Hugh Jackson's return to the Bay Area, lose to the Bengals 33-13. Last week, Flacco, 117 yards passing, the fifth lowest total in his regular season career. Who knew that the Broncos would be winning with defense and that they would stifle this Baltimore offense the way they did? Oh, wait a minute. I knew, because we bet on this game last week and I won.
Oh, I thought you were teeing me up to brag about my preview, because that's like exactly what I wrote about for my Denver preview a few weeks ago.
I don't read your previews.
Yeah, apparently. Yeah, no, I'm not surprised that Denver was able to win with defense. Denver's a talented defensive team, but putting this back on Baltimore, that they got to find some answers in the passing game. They are deficient at wide receiver with Perriman out. And I think we need to see more of the scheme working them open. Their offensive line wasn't great either. They lost in the trenches, both run and pass. That's not going to be the case in most games this season. But I think Mark Trestman does a great job with route combinations and working one route off of another to help get receivers open. He did that in Chicago with really good players. It's more important that you do it with average players, because obviously they're the ones who need it more. You need to get those guys open through scheme, and that's going to be the challenge this week is doing that against the Raiders team, who you know what they're going to play. They're going to be a zone team.
Yeah. Dolphins at Jaguars. Dolphins 1-0, Jaguars 0-1. In your mind, and I don't know if you watched the Dolphins win in Washington, but Washington did find some success on the ground against what is a tough Dolphins front seven. In your mind, do the Jaguars build on that?
They could. You know, Jacksonville, the one bright spot for Jacksonville last week was TJ Yeldon, their rookie running back. So what does that mean moving forward? Maybe it means not much. I don't know. Or maybe it means everything. But Jacksonville, they're not a very good passing team. So if they are to compete at all, they're going to have to get something from the running game, not just because you got to run if you can't pass, but because if you can't pass, then you need to figure out a way to pass through deception. And the running game's a big part of that. Play action, misdirection elements, being able to pass out of running personnel, really committing to being a run-type team. They might have to do that at some point in Jacksonville this season.
Yeah. Last game of the week, Jets at Colts. Jets 1-0 after walloping the Browns. The Colts 0-1 after losing to the Bills. Geno Smith, the Jets quarterback, who had his jaw broken over a dispute over, what was it, $600?
Yes, $600.
He's out in at least another week. Ryan Fitzpatrick again gets the start. Fitz was 15 of 24 with 2 touchdowns and a pick last week. Not too shabby. Dante Moncrief, the big surprise for the Colts, 11 targets, 6 catches, 46 yards, and a touchdown. as compared to Andre Johnson, who was something of a no-show. 10 targets, 4 catches, 24 yards.
Well, it sounds like he showed. He just didn't get the catches
right
there.
He was there. He was at the game.
He was there. And I'll tell you, early in the game, Luck really forced that ball to T.Y. Hilton, which he was facing man-to-man coverage. So I think that's revealing, because who you throw to in man coverage is often a choice. It's not with zone coverage. It's dictated by where the coverage defenders are, where it rotates, what the routes are. When you're playing man-to-man, you're choosing the matchup you like best and targeting there. I was a little surprised how often Luck worked the ball to Hilton early in that game. You know, who knows if Hilton will even be in this game against the Jets, but we're talking now about a Colts offense that is going up against a defense that's very similar stylistically to the one that just kicked them in the mouth. You got a Jets team that can play man coverage, and they do a lot. In fact, they do more than Buffalo with pressure packages and inside blitzes. And the Colts, by the way, their offensive line is at its weakest inside. It is not an athletic group. I guarantee you Todd Bowles will bring at least 10 double-A gap type blitzes here. Andrew Luck's going to have to be throwing in the face of pressure, which he does probably better than anyone in the league. But the Colts ought to be nervous about this one.
Certainly one of the best when blitzed, though the Colts will be missing, or could be missing, T.Y. Hilton, who is questionable with a left knee injury. I'd like to finish the show, Andy, with a feature that is near and dear to my heart. We want to show that we're well-rounded human beings and that we don't sit around and watch football all day and dream up feature stories and analysis stories and such. This is your recommended non-football readings of the week. Andy, did you read anything that was not football this week?
Oh, yeah, I did. I probably read non-football 90 minutes a day or so. Oh, I treat it like weightlifting. If you're a writer, reading is like your weightlifting.
Yeah, that's a nice routine. I had no idea.
Yeah, well, because I do a yoga-like stretch routine, and I can stretch and read at the same time. And if I didn't have the other one, I probably wouldn't do either enough. It works out well.
When we really got to know each other and become friends was at the Super Bowl, this past Super Bowl in Phoenix, and you spent most of the time in the morning as we were getting ready to go to whatever availability going through your yoga poses. And now that I'm thinking about it, I recall that you always had a book.
I did, yeah. And at that time, I was reading that J.K. Rowling book called A Casual Vacancy. It wasn't Harry Potter. This is a grown-up book. All right, my recommended non-reading is anything by Lionel Shriver this week. I'm burning through her books really fast, blazing through them, I guess. She's a great character-driven writer.
Okay. Mine is actually an article in the New York Times. It's by Serge Kovaleski, September 16th, 2015. The title, or headline, I'm sorry, Steve Renazzisi, comedian who told of 9/11 escape, admits he lied. It's sort of, this is the guy from The League, okay? He's you know, one of the actors on The League. I don't even watch the show. He's kind of a goof. But it's funny to me, this article, because it treats this kind of silly thing about a B-list celebrity lying about where he was on 9/11 as if it were like some big investigative piece. And I don't know if it was sort of...
Is it a comedy article?
It's almost parody of itself, but I think it's the writer taking it very seriously. So that's funny.
Oh, okay. Ray Lewis syndrome. It's Ray Lewis syndrome. It's become so serious, it becomes kind of a parody of itself.
Exactly. So go check that out. And if I can cheat a little bit, I would tell people to go watch the documentary Citizen 4 on HBO Go. It's about Edward Snowden. It's been out for a good bit, but I just watched it a couple days ago, and I might rewatch it tonight.
Oh, you're getting very political here, Klimko. All right, very good. You're headed to Green Bay this week. I'll be watching all the film in Boise and tweeting that out. If you've got anything to say about our podcast here, use the hashtag MMQB podcast and send it to @RobertKlimko or @Andy_Benoit.
Thank you to Dan Bloom, our producer, our various editors at the MMQB who give us this opportunity, our researcher, John Daigle, and Michael Brockers, our guest, the St. Louis Rams, and Artis Twyman specifically, and Casey Pierce of the PR staff. Until next week, this has been the MMQB podcast with myself, Robert Klimko, and my friend, Andy Benoit.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.